This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, November 17th, 2010.
Order, order, order. The first matter that comes before us this afternoon, after having first determined that we have a quorum, which we do, is the approval of the minutes from October 27th. And we have 2 minutes to approve the minutes. Yes, sir.
I have two small things that might not be worth mentioning. The first one is that when Ed proposed an amendment over here, the response was found friendly, and then it was approved by a vote of 16-0. I mean, if it was found friendly, we didn't need to vote on it. I don't remember what happened. But
not a clue.
That's sort of
yeah.
I suppose my proposed amendment to the minutes is that we cut the sponsors of the motion found this amendment friendly, or alternatively say something like the sponsors of the motion agreed with this motion or something like that. Anyway, that's
so,
sort of.
So where was
this? Is the
page 2, Evan?
Yeah, page 2. This is the 1, 2, 3, 4 fifth full paragraph.
Yeah.
To begin, C. Walcott led the discussion.
Okay.
With the second last sentence.
Made an amendment.
I guess what I would say is something. The sponsors of the motion were in agreement with this amendment, or thought this might be a good idea. Because if they found it friendly, we didn't need to vote.
I think you do need to vote on it, even if you find it friendly.
I don't know if that.
That's how we have a parliamentarian at the student assembly meetings, and that's how we do it. Because once you present a resolution, it's as is, unless you amended, and even if it's friendly, they still vote on it.
Okay.
I wish I knew more about the Robert Jones Award.
That's not how we do it.
When it comes to language,
doesn't matter. Perhaps more important is at the top of page 3. E. Cortez said this would be similar to the. That should be the U.S. Senate. That's the Senate I was talking about, not the faculty Senate.
Right. Well, much the same.
I don't know how the faculty Senate runs their committee structure.
I do.
And, Mr. President, I also had a recommended change.
Yes, sir.
In section 3, paragraph 3, it starts with Jay Blair said that there is a normal contract cycle.
Yeah.
I wanted to clarify or add a sentence, a new sentence, too. The current paragraph reads, or two sentences read, Jay Blair said there is a normal contract cycle where the contract is up for a new competition every few years. Judging from parent input, comma, BH has not fallen below the acceptable threshold that requires early termination. There was a significant missing thought in between those two factually correct things, which I would add a sentence to what I had said was, if the UA believes BH has fallen below an acceptable threshold of performance that justifies early termination, they should vote to support the resolution. If not, they should reject it. Judging from parental support, I then said I didn't believe that they had fallen below that threshold.
Is our scribe managed to get that, more or less?
I haven't. I presented it in writing. She didn't have a chance to recirculate it before the meeting.
Sure.
But given the controversy over this, I thought
yes,
these kind of things were important to have in this issue in these minutes.
Good point. Are there further additions, corrections, emendations, or whatever to the minutes? Are we ready for a motion to approve the minutes?
I so move. Second.
All right. All in favor? Everybody looks to be in favor. Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, good. We got rid of that one. We now move on briskly to the sustainability resolution. Mike?
So this is, I hope this should be quick. This is a short resolution that's coming out of the Sustainability Committee that was written actually by the President of the Sustainable Campus Communications Committee. And what their goal is was to create an effort somehow spearheaded by University Communications to bring up a whole bunch of stakeholders on campus together to craft a whole bunch of imagery, slogans, unified look and feel for sustainability at Cornell. And this is something that we're hoping to complete by next Earth Day, Sustainability Month, next April. What we are hoping to do is just kind of establish the UA and the UA Sustainability Committee as a stakeholder in this process of basically developing this new imagery. I'm sure many of you have been following a lot of sustainability stories that have been going on here at the university over the past couple months. And we've come to the realization that we need some unified look and feel to basically label, to brand sustainability at Cornell. So this this effort is to try and achieve that goal.
Okay.
So the branding causes a lot of pain to the campus. So I want to know if you talk to the other committees that are around the campus that would be affected.
Yes, I mean this this resolution and a couple emails that have been tossed around the President Sustainable Campus Committee, CCSF, Cooperative Extension. These are all stakeholders. These are all groups that are going to be stakeholders in the process, and I'm hoping that this resolution establishes the university assembly, the people of the university, as a stakeholder in developing the century.
So basically, this is something that's already going to happen.
Yeah.
You're just trying to get the UA to be part of it.
Yes.
There is no discussion. When you have a branding, then generally, like with Cornell's brand, there's a set of rules of who can use the brand under what auspices.
Mm-hmm.
So to have the brand is one thing. This does not address the rules. Does that need to be addressed here, or is that already going to happen some other way?
University communications actually has very few rules. We're a decentralized university, and there are very few rules that are put out there. There's one basically guideline surrounding the logo, and we've seen some changes recently surrounding that. But there's not going to be any specific rules requiring any units at the university to use it. There will be guidelines basically made around this sort of brand on how to use it, where we should use it, and in what cases it should be used.
I can tell you with the Cornell logo, which is very regimented, and there's a pamphlet put out of multiple pages realizing this is not the Cornell logo.
Yes.
All I would say is if we're going to brand it, that when you use that brand, it associates some sense of officiality or connection to it. I would think that Be It Resolved should address and appropriate guidelines, some clause like that in it. For its use. Unless you think it's implied with what you have here.
I think it's implied. I think that if this is being done on the under the auspices of university communications, I am confident that organization, like with the logo guidelines, will establish some sort of guidelines for it.
Maybe even a longer book.
Hopefully not.
And you're just talking about the Ithaca campus and extension, right? You're not talking about the medical college. You're not talking about Qatar. You're just talking about this particular unit, basically Ithaca extension as well. I know extension is all over New York State.
If they create it, once they create it, and if Weill Cornell or Qatar wants to use it, they can use it, I'm sure.
Well, Weill Cornell does have an extensive website on sustainability. Qatar has nothing, because I checked after you sent this out. So that's why I was asking the question.
Okay. I'll let whoever will be organizing this effort on my committee kind of bring in, remember to bring in Weill Cornell and Qatar as well.
Good. Other comments around the table?
Yes.
Maybe just to pick up on Jim's point, just out of curiosity, I know the Cornell logo has basically its own website just to the dissemination and guidelines of the logo. I wonder how you foresee this logo being disseminated.
I really hope that doesn't become that complicated.
Yeah, of course.
It'll probably be available to some locations.
Will contact university communications.
And I'm sure probably this is just going to be something as simple as copy and paste off of some website or some document that's already out there. So I'll bring that to the attention.
Okay, any further discussion from anybody? Ready for the motion? All in favor of this motion, raise your hand. All opposed? All abstaining. Okay, we have one abstention. Everybody else is in favor. All right.
Moving briskly along, we now come to the Bailey Conservatory. Randy, you want to talk about that for a moment?
We hear that Cornell is becoming more of a research university. There's a lot of talk that it's less of a land grant, the university, in terms of the Department of Education, and there's no doubt that it's not a teaching university fundamentally, but I would also argue that it's becoming an administrative university. And so in order to protect some of the teaching mission of the conservatory, I'd like to submit this resolution. And should I read it or should I just summarize it?
I think we can just summarize it.
Yeah. So it's to protect the conservatory from what may have been imminent destruction a few days ago, but the Department of the Historic Preservation Department of State got involved, and it probably, well, at least it's had a longer lifetime. Because of that, perhaps this lifetime would have ended this past weekend. And so this resolution is to just help protect the teaching mission of the university and be conserving this historic and useful field.
Okay.
And we'll talk about it next week.
Right. This is the first presentation of this.
We're not voting.
No, I don't think we'll vote on it.
People from different to talk about it.
We thought we needed a little more exploration of the pluses, the minuses, and recent developments, because it is a fast-moving target. Yeah.
I mean, I basically have two questions. One is that I think as the situation has changed, maybe the language is different, but the first sentence of the be it resolved is find sufficient funds to restore, renovate, or replace. Of course, those are three very different things, though they do handily all together. I suppose what I would wonder is, I'm not directly connected with this, what would be the preferred goal? Would it be better to keep the existing building because it's historic and restore it? Or is it eventually going to be demolished and we just want to make sure it's replaced?
People in landscape architecture actually have projects to... I can't remember restore or rehabilitate. They mean different things. So I can't answer you specifically, but there's people interested in taking that building and making it functional.
Well, I guess my other question, this is maybe sort of more general thing. I found out about this yesterday? Today's Wednesday. Monday at the GPSA meeting, somebody presented their petition to us saying this is happening. How is it, I've a question to anybody, how is it that a building comes up for demolition and can be almost virtually destroyed within a week and nobody...
It would have been. It didn't come to the campus planning committee.
Why not?
There may be some back channels that handle this, so I don't know, but there's rumors. It's all based, everything is based on rumors. And there's 500 some odd signatures already since less than a week ago when this came up to say, no, there's 500 and some odd, almost 600 people that haven't been, there's been no communication with those people that haven't been there.
No,
just out of curiosity, when you link this building to Cornell as a teaching institution, is that a symbolic? What's the connection between the state of Cornell as it's method?
So in the time of budget cuts, it's easy to take money from things that don't generate money themselves. And teaching doesn't generate money itself like other things.
Right.
So teaching has taken, I don't even want to say a back seat. The people are running behind the train saying, wait a minute, we want to be on this train. And that's what I mean.
So, yeah, I was wondering what the connection between that was and the building in particular.
It's used for teaching. Okay. I use it for teaching. Okay. In fact, so I use it for teaching, and I send my students down there. And I was one of the people that weren't contacted either.
Okay. Is it fully used for teaching, or has it been used for research by professors? Is it?
It's used for teaching. It's used for research. It's used for people to find a green, calm, serene place in the winter to just get their head together. It's used by photographers, artists, poets. For inspiration.
Well, should a whereas then be added saying that it's used as a research tool for professors for the advancement of land exploration?
It could, so frankly, I didn't write the resolution. I helped with it. But the resolution was to stress the teaching. It really was made for that. but it wouldn't be wrong to add that whereas. But if we really was to say that this is for the students and for teachers.
Let's come back to this next time. I think that's a good suggestion, though, to add something about scholarship to that. So I think that would strengthen things.
In today's Sun, there's a whole big article about it, right?
Yeah, 2 days in a row.
And it indicated that funds had actually been allocated for restoring the building, for renovating, but that the cost would be 5 times what they allocated, which implied that there's been discussion about this. Was it done, you know, behind closed doors in secret? And you're in plan science, they don't tell you about it?
The 5 times number, which Jan Nyrop was quoted from, was a number that was made up by somebody in my building.
They're going to have ultimate climate
for other reasons.
Well, it's more a question of process, and you said it sort of went around campus planning.
I'd just like to say one thing, that this is a wonderful place, that conservatory. If you've never been there, you should try to go there before it ever gets to
all the plants were taken out. Yeah.
Because it is absolutely, in the wintertime, a place for solitude, reflection, but also it's a nice, warm, tropical environment that you can escape from, and it's a beautiful place. So I didn't realize they took the plants out, but they have some very nice orchids there. It's very upsetting to me,
because
I'm recruiting new faculty in my past. I would bring them there as a place to show, you know, what's available here. You know?
We should make a profile of that building, the image for the university-wide sustainability.
We have a motion. I can't see how it would cost 5 times more.
That was a made-up number.
To renovate
it. I know a person that started the rumor for completely other reasons, and it just got to Jan Nyrop.
Let's continue this discussion next time. And see if we can come to some conclusion. I would like to move now, if I might, to the charter. And the basic strategy here is that we have two things that we are going to be concerned about. There is the charter, which is the general outline of what the university assembly is all about. And then there are the bylaws, which are the details of how we're going to operate. And Ed, do you want to lead this interesting discussion?
Sure. So basically what we're doing here is just moving the resolution which would approve the draft charter, which hopefully everybody's read by now and it's been online. The idea is not to vote on it today. We actually can't vote on it because we have to present it in a meeting before voting on it. But so this takes care of that. And what the executive committee has realized is that by far the bulk of comments which we've received deal with the bylaws and not the charter. So the charter draft that we have seems to be a draft that has very good agreement upon it. So we may be able to vote on that actually at the next meeting. So we need to move that now, start the conversation, make sure it's what we want, we're going to talk about academic matters, and so that sets the groundwork so that we can get the charter and the bylaws so that's not a charter amendment. The bylaws we can vote on at the same meeting that we move a resolution to approve the bylaws. So and we'll talk about the bylaws in the next item as well.
Okay.
So I'd like to move that resolution. Second?
I'll second it.
Yeah, okay. So that takes care of that. Is there any questions about that general process? Okay. I guess, Randy, if you want to talk about...
Yeah, so had academic matters not been in the charter today, I don't think we could even be discussing greenhouse in the conservatory.
Mm.
So I think there's a lot of checks and balances in having academic matters in the charter. So academic matters, it had been or still is defined in the charter or in the bylaws in the page one of each bylaw, the short and the long version. Academic matters may include curriculum, educational philosophy, tenure policy, and all other academic matters deemed suitable by the UA. Recommendations shall be made by majority approval of the members present. And that just gives us very broad scope to look at conservatories. And I think that's actually enough to make my case.
Can you read that again, actually? The definition?
Academic matters may include...
Now, is this in the charter, Randy? I don't know.
So, no. So what was in the charter?
That's what's it. What I mean.
It was in the previous of the current...
Yeah.
Okay, what was taken out of the charter, this is on page 3 of 14. Legislative authority over policy... Oh, no. Oh, okay. Academic matters was taken out of legislative. So it doesn't say we have legislative authority over academic matters here
in the current draft.
Where it says legislative authority and policy development. So I'll also argue about policy development that we shouldn't be a reviewing body as much as proactive. Body to bring legislation instead of reviewing legislation. But in one of those things, so before we talk about the reviewing versus creating, I'd like to say that academic matters should be in this list of things with the definition of the academic matters being that because of that.
This would be legislative? Where is this in the charter? Where do you want to put this?
So
I remember reading it, I just remember where it goes.
So in the charter, there's what's the new 3.1 authority and policy development. And there's a list of things. And one of those things is not academic matters.
Well, I mean, the academic matter belongs to the faculty, not the staff, not the students, not any. You can talk about tenure all day long. Deans are not going to listen to anything but tenure. You were faculty. You were dean of faculty. Who?
So.
What will the faculty senate say about anything we try and do relative to academic matters? We can pass something and have our faculty representatives present it to the faculty senate, but this is going to be another one of the things we put in. It's either not going to be agreed to by the administration or the deans. We have no say over academic matters in terms of authority, okay? In terms of looking at things, you can't find out anything about tenure as it is, even if you're in the faculty. The deans keep it secret for the most part. You think we're going to be able to do anything, Randy? This is just adding another thing that is there that we can do things with, but no, we have no authority to do that. We have no power. No one's going to give us power over academic matters.
So we stood up to the changes in the biology curriculum, even though the answer was as weak as could be. It was extremely weak, but he has to live with that. We had a very strong and clear statement, and we can live with that. With this greenhouse resolution, another academic matter.
It's the authority part. You know, being able to discuss it and make recommendations. This authority is not like legislative authority over parking. But the minute you say authority, that's where I have the problem.
But in terms of if we're reviewing things, if President Thornton asks us to review the conservatory, we say, we'd be happy to review it. But he may miss it because it may have taken the expressway from one administrator to the other. And luckily, somebody was just in the way.
But aren't we free to do that regardless of what it says in the charter? Any member of this constituency that, hey, I think the UA should do something, make a statement about the conservatory, who's going to stand up and say, well, I'm sorry, but in the, that is specifically in our charter, so I guess we can't do it.
Constitutionalists will say it's not in our charter, and activists will say we can do anything we want, but the words matter.
The charter draft says, including but not necessarily limited to the following subjects, which is the bit that we're not reading out loud. I mean, I sort of feel that we can list as many or as few things as we want there, and still reserve the right as the university assembly to comment on whatever we feel like, whether that's tenure, whether that's curriculum, whether that's greenhouses. I mean, it says, but not limited to. And what we put in our charter isn't going to affect which administrators consult us or not. I mean, how many administrators do you think have read the UA charter or will read the UA charter after we pass it?
No, I hope several.
So I think we can add academic matters, we could not add it. I think no matter what we do, we still have the right to comment on it.
I would like to just comment that having looked at the university bylaws, the faculty is delegated from the president the right to determine academic matters. And that is not something that comes to the assembly. I think we weaken our position by including it in our charter when I think I agree with Evan that it's covered by these other phrases, which says we can comment on you jolly well please. My opinion only.
And I just want to add, part of this context is the things that we did stipulate were the things that we had a lot of discussion about, that these were obvious things which we wanted to emphasize, but that we do have the authority, the ability to propose administrative policies affecting the wider university because the community, including but not necessarily limited to. So even though we didn't need to stipulate, we stipulated those items which were clearly identified and which we would be having committees and stuff directly to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that list is a list of things we would expect people contemplating actions in those areas to touch base with us on. I would not expect them to touch base with us on academic matters. The matter about the biology curriculum, as you commented at the time, why the UAE should comment is they violated university policy, you felt, in how they handled the matter. And it was the violation of not following the rules that led to our comments, not the academic matter itself. In other words, we would never involve ourselves in biology curriculum, but if they work that curriculum in some way not in accordance with faculty policy and their own internal mechanisms, and we're doing some kind of bait and switch, then maybe this committee might have something to say about it, which I think falls more under our legal oversight charter than it does academic matters.
That's not how it happened. By chance, I lent my car to somebody about a year ago, and I couldn't go to Boston, and I went to the Charter Review Committee meeting. And I noticed when we were going through the charter review that we had some authority over academic matters. And that was the stimulus for writing the resolution. And if such wording isn't in here, somebody else may not have the stimulus in years to come.
Well, it's a very good point. I think I share reservations as well as to whether that's really what I consider a bread and butter versus an issue that has broad campus issue, and the UA's opinion would be relevant to other opinions that are being sought on the matter outside of the faculty senate and the dean of faculty.
I hope it is not our bread and butter. I agree with you. I hope it's not our bread and butter, but it's a check and balance when things go awry.
Sure. I feel like I understand Alice's frustration because it's so hard to say we have authority over something when ultimately it's a higher power that makes the decision. But I feel like our job is we have more of an authority over the voice of our constituents. And it's always our job to bring things forward like the conservatory resolution where even though we know that it's not our decision whether or not to bring it down, that it's our job to at least stand up for those actions. And I don't see it matters either way. If it's in there or not in there, because it's up to people like Randy to be proactive in trying to solve those issues, whether or not it's in there. I don't see the drawback to having it in there right now. That's my only issue.
I would reiterate the point that we're all making. I think that, you know, the point that you made, Jim, about the process issue, is for me, that's the concern about biology greenhouses. I confess I've never visited this particular greenhouse. Now I feel like I should, even though there aren't any plants. But
I would agree with that.
No, for me, it's not an issue, the greenhouse specifically, it's not about curriculum, it's not about anything, it's about who was consulted. How is it that we come to be discussing demolishing a building like that? Nobody heard about this last week. And that, I think, it's not an academic issue. I think it's we can feel free to comment on things that we feel are important. And I think the not necessarily limited to includes that. I think we should say something about the greenhouse. I think that's appropriate. And I think that's appropriate even under the new charter.
So we could make teaching as unimportant as the rest of the university makes it.
that's not what this is about. You know, this is... We don't, Ellis is exactly right. It's not, we don't get to decide what we have authority over. We can write, we can put whatever we want in our chart.
We do, because the old charter gives us it defines academic matters and says that if something is awry, they
will
give us something.
But to play devil's advocate for a second, I mean, say we were to put in, you know, the university assembly shall be consulted on all tenure review cases.
No,
that's not going to make it so. It would need to be a change in university policy that delegates that authority to us. If
and
the authority is delegated by the bylaw to the faculty senate, we can list it in there. I'm not saying that's a bad idea. I'm just saying it doesn't. My point, if I can sum up, is we don't have any more or less authority on academic matters, whether or not it's listed in our charter. We have precisely the same authority.
Right. I don't think it matters whether it's in there or not. And when all is said and done, isn't legal counsel going to look at this and they don't want it? They'll take it out. You know what I mean? If it shouldn't be in there, they'll take it out.
John?
I feel like what Evan's getting at and what Jim started is just a matter of practicality. It's more of like we're not looking at it from an academic side. We're looking at like what are the normal channels the school would have to go through to like demolish a building of this kind, and did they go through the normal process, and if not, what is our comment going to be like regarding that?
Or do we feel the process is appropriate even if they went through the normal
right,
process?
But we don't, I don't think, I feel like we like understand that we won't ever have the authority to write a resolution saying go do it and they won't do it. But we do have the authority to research if they did it the right way and like point out any deficiencies in the process.
I guess I would wonder what's our sort of next step here. Do we want to vote on whether this line?
I would like to. I think we've had an explanation. I think the question is up to this body as to whether we want to include the phrase academic matters in the charter. And so if there's no further discussion, I think a vote is in order. All in favor of including academic matters in the revised charter, please raise your hand. 3. Okay, 3 in favor. All opposed? Seven, I count. And abstaining? 3 abstaining. Well, it sounds to me as if the motion lost. Sorry about that.
Me too.
Charlie, I think there's more members around the table than both.
Oh, I got
that raise has had a little bit low. We might
13.
I would like a voice call vote. No.
All right, let's try that once again.
Well, here's my chance.
The cosmopolitan.
All in favor of the party, Randy? One, two, three, in favor, okay? All opposed? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, opposed, and abstaining.
Mike, behind you.
Oh, sorry about that.
And, it was my fault.
It hit me over the head.
Sorry.
Okay. All right.
I just so it's clear in the minutes, I voted against the motion, but I want to make it very clear that I still think we do have the right to engage on academic issues.
I agree.
That'll be in the minutes when this comes before future bodies and they're curious about process our charter went through.
And as people continue on this body.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I think that is correct. Okay, Ed, what do we do next? Do we do a straw vote on the charter as it now sits?
Yeah, we can take a straw vote. Is there anybody that has any comments that they haven't submitted yet with the charter or anything from your assemblies, yourself, anything?
This is the charter, not the bylaws.
Right.
Yeah, I say we take a straw vote to see how it looks. We can't vote to approve it at this meeting.
No.
See how everybody's feeling about it.
Could you comment on how much the charter has been streamlined in terms of... I remember when we first started this, there were a lot of things in there that didn't make much sense. And I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, so... I joked with Ari at one point that essentially what we've done is dissolve the University Assembly and reestablish something called the University Assembly. And I joked by that by way of saying what we kind of ended up doing was looking at the current document and saying this is a foundation, but rewriting a new document and using it as a model. We've gone through it line by line, item by item. And Ari's done a tremendous amount of legwork to type stuff up. The general principle, and anybody jump in here, was to make the charter itself as pared down, streamlined as the bare minimum of what you need to establish, and then the bylaws for the operational things, the committee structures, the charges of committees, and that's because it's a considerably higher bar to modify charters than it is for the bylaws and also just as a general principle. So the charter, a lot of stuff was moved, pulled out of the charter and put into the bylaws. So that in itself pulled the charter tighter. It's not to say that we lost stuff, but it became reorganized. And outside of that, I'd say that even though I joked that we dissolved and then reestablished, it's still largely the same principle. We have changed somewhat the membership to bring it more in parity with the general percentage population of people on campus. And in the charter, I mean, we all have our different opinions over the bigger effects in the charter. I think that's probably one of the bigger effects within the charter document. So, anybody have anything else they want to add?
What is the final resolution of the breakdown of the constituent groups?
I don't have the numbers in front of me. Does anybody have?
That was the only issue I recall that we
had. 4.42.
That was both.
4.42 plus the chairs, which is the decision.
4.42 being.
Gratitude.
Plus the chairs of the four committees.
Four committees.
Yes.
And that was Charlie's idea, and I give him a ton of credit for that. I think that in and of itself will go a long way for this body. Mm-hmm. That brings in each of the other assemblies. Their chairs into this room, part of the conversation, and cut down on some redundancy, but also will lead to more productive, you know, conversations in here. We'll know what the other assemblies are working on in real time. I think that that's a great addition to this charter.
So, a question on that point, maybe the assemblies, I can only speak to the GPSA, but I assume it's similar in other groups, currently have a liaison to X, Y, or Z group. Is that something we foresee happening? You know, are you going to have? Well, I don't know if that's really related.
Yeah, that question. Are liaisons still necessary given that, that revised structure?
No, I think the idea was that by having the boss person there, you you have you enable that communication,
okay.
So you don't need the liaison. And
obviously.
The same argument pertains, which we'll talk about later or next time, in the bylaws that all the various committees, the chair of the committee ought to be a member of this body,
right.
Again, to promote discussion and communication so that we don't get in this situation where committees seem somehow to be disconnected from us and there isn't decent communication back and forth, which has been a problem.
It's going to be up to the constituent assemblies to make the changes that would best suit them.
The other question I have, does not the charter have the dismissal if you have missed two meetings, or is that in the bylaws?
Ari?
I believe there is not an absentee policy in the U.S. charter or bylaws, definitely not in the charter.
Well,
doesn't it say something?
Which is a two-thirds vote, and the language is broad enough that absenteeism could be that
included.
But is that in the charter?
It's in the charter. I can just do it right now.
I remember the gist of the issue I have is if the heads of the constituent committees are part of this and they're not showing up, it's not like me not showing up as an adjunct, and I'm not carrying my water and I'm out of here, maybe. But if they don't, there's a nuance there. I don't think it's a showstopper, but there's a nuance there. We don't want to write something later in there. We really can't. We wouldn't want to enforce.
Yeah, no.
If the head of the faculty senate never shows up to our meetings, he/she should be chastised. But I don't think we want to vote him off the committee. That's not. You're kind of a statutory member.
Yeah, I guess that would. So it's not an automatic kickoff. It's a two-thirds vote of the assembly to do it. There isn't anything in there that says except for the chairs of the other one. I hadn't thought about it, quickly thinking about it. Anybody else can chime in. I would find that pretty amazing if two-thirds of the body, but...
No, I don't think that the head of the four constituent committees should be able to be voted off. I think that they should be reprimanded or whatever until they show up or send somebody...
Or send somebody to represent them. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
And so again, it's a fringe thing. I just...
The football team, you think, would be appropriate to send or something?
Yeah. Do you think they could take him?
Well, it's a question, isn't it?
Send the assembly police.
Right, what a great idea. Is there further discussion about the charter?
From four members of the UA that are part of it, does it specify that it has to be an undergraduate, a staff member, a graduate student, or a faculty member, or is it just any four? And should we specify that?
Diversity.
That are part of the executive committee, or that are
part of the executive
committee? Oh, part of the, I missed the critical word, the
Sorry.
Executive committee. Yeah, no, I think the idea is to have one of each on the executive committee.
But is that specified, or is that?
I think it says that the three positions should come from each of the three constituencies, and the fourth is like, what, there's a term used for it, ranking member.
The officers and the ranking members.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Also, say ranking members with an S.
Yes.
I submitted an amendment to remove that S.
Oh my gosh! Ranking members. It hasn't been removed.
Yeah. Football team.
No, you've got your cruel and unusual punishment. Okay.
The offices of the assembly are the chair, the executive vice chair, and the vice chair for operations, who must be of different constituencies. Additionally, a ranking member must be appointed for each constituency, not otherwise represented.
I think I submitted an amendment there too, but not for the constituency, not represented.
What kind of memory do you have, man?
I know. I'm sure I've done that.
That's
good. So as I've been
acting,
got this critical change.
Who was ranking member? Was there any sort of
change? The one that I was saying, the bit that Mike just read, said for those constituencies not represented. And since there are only four constituencies, it should be for the constituency not represented.
It reads, additionally, a ranking member must be appointed for each constituency not otherwise represented.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason it was originally plural was because there was some question about whether each of the officers would be required to be of a different constituency.
Okay.
Leaving it plural makes it easier to get to that,
but since
it can be singular.
Good. All right. Having soft.
Yes. Sorry. One last question. Going back to the removal, when you mentioned the affirmative vote, is that like, would you have to bring it up? Could you bring it up the day of, or do you have to bring it up a week in advance?
I think you can bring it up the day of.
On the charter changes.
Yeah.
It's not like a charter change. So. That's just, okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's
other.
Okay. Just clarification?
Yeah, just clarification for myself.
All right.
Yeah.
Here. Sing a song.
Actually, I wanted to share a conversation that I had just had with Tommy Bruce about this proposal, because we've been talking with him about...
The charter or the bylaws?
The charter.
The charter, okay.
About the repercussions it would have for administration and anything he could predict about concerns or suggested changes, and he had one.
You're scaring us here.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to bring this one up because I actually think it will be embraced. So he was interested to have. Yeah, I'm a very slow speaker.
No, the pay position, that's really embraced. I'm kidding.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I that one.
Too late.
The idea was that for these legislative actions of the Assembly, there is no language in here that explicitly says that there must be public notice of the action and that there must be a hearing. And he said, and I literally just met with him, so I don't have the exact language, but the elements of it would be there must be public notice at least, let's say, a week in advance. So the meeting must be open to the public so that anybody who has an interest can speak. And there should be a directive that makes clear that the decision of the Assembly should be based on the record accumulated by the Assembly from comments, as opposed to, you know, people's neighbors and whatnot. And that language like that, having that in there, would make it a much stronger proposal. The idea is it self-explanatory why those are...
Yes, and I think there's probably broad support for the notice, some sense of notice, and open meetings. The last part about the public record I have a little more concern about, because sometimes I come back and go to my... If it's not very clear to me what they would say or have an opinion on, I go talk to the University Assembly, the Employee Assembly, and ask. That wouldn't be in your record, I guess, necessarily, depending on how it comes up. I come here prepared either to vote or to hear and decide and to vote. So I would want to be careful about that public record, because it's not that we want to have a smoke-filled room, but I also...
We don't want to make it binding.
Well, it's one of those things where we're not going to have move these. Well, I guess we could move these things to Bailey Hall and have, you know, the microphones and the, you know, what we did very much with the child care issue, which I think that level of issue is, I don't know, certainly less common.
Less home.
So anyway, I just would want to be careful that we don't trip ourselves up with the process that reasonable, prudent process, reasonable person standard, as opposed to, you know, I mean, because the level of minutes we take, I know we have a recording, but, I mean, how would we substantiate that it was in the public record and somebody called us to ask a meeting following?
I think the audio is available to everybody, isn't it?
Yeah. Maybe. I think it is.
Well, I think the particular focus was on this notion that there should be public notice and there should be a hearing for each of these policy recommendations of the Assembly.
Absolutely.
There should be a general expectation that it's based on what was received through the meeting or through written comments, as opposed to what somebody's neighbor thought.
We probably have a standing reservation in the, you know, Daily Sun or appropriate Cornell publications the week before our standard meeting, you know, it says, you know, here's the agenda. We also want to be careful about the ability to deal with items not on the agenda, you know, but...
How will this work, Ari? What is this?
So we come up with some proposal, and now we go out, we have a public meeting. That would be like raising hands in the gallery of the Congress. We're all supposed to take these out to our constituencies, discuss them, and then come here to vote, and then go out and get it at some public meeting. I don't see that's not how we're embodied.
That's not quite it.
So could you explain it a little more? So tell me how this process would work.
Okay, so the hearing could be a university assembly meeting. There should be some public meeting that neutral public notice has been given of, this is the policy that the UA is considering at this meeting, and anybody who has interest should be able to come forward and provide their comment.
But maybe that's what the committees do, rather than the UA as a whole.
It doesn't have to be the UA as a whole, but there should be a public hearing that informs the decision.
So if I just, the current charter, or the draft, says, in preparing such actions, the Assembly must make a reasonable effort to identify and consult with stakeholders, including the management of units that maintain or carry out such policies. So to me, it seems like that principle is there. It's just maybe not articulating that there must be a 1 week prior notice or something. You see where I'm in new bullet 3.2, legislative actions.
Legislative
action. Okay.
So I guess to me it seems like the principle's there. I don't know if we want to tweak it a little bit, but...
I would propose basically a form of legislative language that we lay this on the table until we see the actual language, the actual proposal of what this might look like, and then we can nitpick if we so choose.
All right.
I want to get it in there, but I also don't want to, you know, slow down the process.
Well, I think the way you've got to do it is send it by email to us so that we can have it. We're not going to vote at this meeting. We can't vote at this meeting. We can simply discuss, and it's going to come up for a formal vote at the next meeting.
We're bound by the current charter. We can't vote on charter amendments on the day that the motion was moved or on the day any amendments to the motion were made.
So we're snippered.
Well, unless we...
Could I maybe work on some language while the rest of the meeting goes?
Well, we don't have to vote on the charter at the next meeting. I would personally love to, but we're not obligated to vote on it next meeting. The key was to move the motion now so that we start that ball rolling.
Yeah, Mike?
I think what Ed said, that sentence or paragraph 3.2 that's already in there is pretty good. It's very general enough for what should be in the charter. But when you start talking about, you know, specifying weeks or certain actions that you have to do, I feel that this might be something more appropriate for the bylaws.
I'll read that sentence again. In preparing such actions, the Assembly must make a reasonable effort to identify and consult with stakeholders, including the management of units that maintain or carry out such policies.
Yeah, it strikes me. Ren?
So I have a few possible words to add to that. A reasonable effort to publicize such actions and to identify and consult with stakeholders.
The issue about giving public notice and holding an open meeting, if we missed an organization, they could come here to discuss it.
I think that's why we have to. This came up, actually. That point was why we include reasonable.
Well, but what Ari is talking about is there's a formal place where people will look to see what we're going to discuss or what we think we're going to discuss this meeting, and if so moved, might show up to either hear the conversation and or make public comment to all the facts that we've already gathered.
Even?
I was going to say my middle name is legitimacy, and we're always talking about this with the GPSA. I think that the way we did this with the child care issue was a sort of model way that this could work. I think that our resolutions are stronger the more input we have. I don't think it needs to say in the charter, you have to advertise like this, you need to consult these people for us to know that it's a good idea. And to know that when a resolution crosses the president's desk, that we can say, we had a public hearing, we consulted with these groups, we got this feedback, and our resolution is based on that, we know it's going to be taken more seriously.
Well, I think it's like academic matters. That to put it in and say that we want to be open says something about us.
There is language in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more implicit than explicit.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that if we just held our meetings in a smoke-filled room with just the whatever, you know, members of the assembly, and we all got together and we made decisions and unilaterally said stuff, the president isn't going to take us seriously. We represent the opinion of those of us in this room. However, if we can say we consulted with people, we did this, that, and the other, we're going to be taken more seriously. It doesn't matter whether or not it says we should do that in the charter.
That's exactly the principle.
Although, from what Ari just said, my impression is that Tommy, in suggesting we put this in, is saying if we put it in, then it's going to remove a potential hurdle that might be there if we don't put it in. He can't tell us what to put in, but if you put this in, it's sure going to go a lot easier for you.
No.
So my feeling is you add to that not just appropriate constituents, but anyone who's interested. Okay? If you just open it, that just adds whatever that 3.2 whatever, instead of whoever the interested party may say, all people who will be made aware of this publicly and they are free to provide their comments, then that would seem to be operating within the spirit that Tommy made this suggestion. Now, again, Tommy is the one who's going to be looking at this more closely. I have a feeling he's passed or you wouldn't be meeting with him. Did I get this correct? If that isn't there, this will not get from Tommy. If it is there, it's likely to get from Tommy.
He's the person in the administration with the default role in the...
But if he suggested that it go in, he did suggest it on the assumption that we're not going to put it in, and it doesn't hurt to put it in, so let's just put in that we'll do it in public. I don't think that we have to have an opium, get Kennedy Auditorium for every time we want to vote on anything.
My issue, and like I say, this is why it's difficult to discuss without actual language, is specifying things too closely. This is, I think, is Mike's point about it being in the bylaws. If we say 1 week, well, what if 5 years from now we think a week and a half is better? The other issue is the third point that Ari made, and again, without having specific language, was basically that we bind ourselves to then do what people in the hearing say. And I think that abdicates our...
The hearing was the part he was at.
Yeah.
Not
wonderful.
Formal on-the-record language, and
okay.
I hear the concern there.
I can't disagree with something that I'm saying.
I would suggest that we leave the charter kind of the way it is. If we want to add a word about public, okay. But I think we ought to tend to this in the bylaws, because I think it really pertains more to our committee structure and how we're going to run our committees than it does this body. It seems to me that most of the issues we deal with ought really to come to us through a committee. Now, I don't know where the greenhouse would appear. I was just thinking about that as an example. Maybe it would come through
campus planning?
Through campus planning or something like that. I don't know.
It wouldn't actually, because I spoke to Nina about this. Somehow there was some loophole. That because they weren't going to use new space,
I was just thinking in the abstract. I'm worried about having this be a totally open body in the sense that anybody can come that we are going to have enormous numbers of open meetings, because I think the child care worked very well, but ideally that would have been done by one of our committees and we could all go and listen. And then it seems to me we need to come together and make some kind of a decision. And to have that, to try and come to a decision in a public meeting, I think is not a profitable way to go.
I would say not every issue requires a public meeting, nor in some cases would you necessarily want one.
Yeah.
But in others, like the child care,
officer had to have one.
Right.
I think if we were to put anything in, it would be something like, let's specific cases that we judge need a public hearing, we will provide a public hearing, but it's up to the committee, you know, it's up to us to say which specific meetings deserve that. So, but that's very broad language also.
But that's very much a bylaws type of thing.
But that's also a bylaws.
Yeah.
I see this in the bylaws as well. I mean, but there's also this intent, again, I think it's a bylaws issue, that we would publish essentially the equivalent of this in some short form a week out, and people could then talk to the constituent or the constituent assemblies if it wasn't necessarily an open meeting, or be advised of an open meeting if, you know, if one is held on a particular issue.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Celine's point almost made me think that it might be appropriate to put in the actual charter if we defined what a public forum was, and we can define it as something that we may use like when we deem necessary. But I feel like to put that comment in the bylaws would be way too arbitrary. If we just said like at our land we can do it if we want to.
I have a terrible memory, and I forgot, and this will come up when the bylaws are discussed, that they're, we put a provision in the bylaws for public notice and comment and all that. So, I think the concern is less about the forum, although I think that if there is an interest to have a commitment as part of this expansion of the UA's authority that says the UA is committed to having public notice and having that public engagement. But I think it, maybe it shouldn't be something that holds it up. Maybe that's something that can be sent to the president, and if he's not satisfied that it's adequately articulated, it can be.
I would prefer to cope with it in the bylaws. It seems to me that we have enough general language in the charter,
exactly right,
which says that we're going to consult with stakeholders and others, and let's worry about the bylaws as step two.
I second that. Particularly going through letting the committees handle it. They worked wonderfully with the Krauss report and the CJC. They ran open forums. It was handled by the CJC through the CJC, and then the CJC brought it to us. You know, I think that should be handled through the committee structure if for no other reason than just we have enough to do.
Yeah. I agree with that, but I was also taken aback in the, I don't know whether it was the Cornell Daily Sun article about the child keeper, President Scorton's decision on the child care, and one of the faculty members, I believe it was faculty, commented about the lack of transparency in that process. You know, when there was public meetings, faculty senate resolution, and it was in the papers. And that got a lot of press in that article that, I don't know, the executive committee sent around. I was like,
yeah, well, that's a nice keyword that people like to say.
The executive committee
last semester as well. Like, we were doing work last semester where we actually had a public hearing in the ILR Conference Center for it. So it's been a lot of transparency.
Some people are always
there are people, you know, his announcement was on the CU info page before it appeared in the Sun. You know, you can't. There's no way you're going to cover for people who don't want to read and know things. You know, you could ask anybody and say they're ignorant about things. But it was there for them to read, and I don't think it's up to Scort to knock on everyone's door or send out an email the way he does things. So,
but I'm by an agreement.
Yeah.
I think we're probably ready to just take a straw vote and see if people like the charter as it is, and then we can move on to the bylaws and maybe address.
Let's do that. All in favor, this is a straw vote, not binding, just information only. All in favor of the charter as it stands. All opposed to the charter as it sits. Any abstentions?
Is there a difference between stand and That's
a wonderful question.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how it
lay. I think it's got a very clear sense of the body, and that is helpful. Thank you. Now, the bylaws. Ed?
I don't have a whole lot to say other than I hope people were able to take a look at the two different drafts of committee structures, well, the bylaws in general. Please, if there's any comments on the bylaws in general. But I think we're at the point where it would be really helpful to know which model of committee structure or blend them or to get an idea of which one the body wants to go forward with from here on out. And then we can put together a final draft of the bylaws. And again, to remind you, and I'm probably going to butcher this in explanation, but the two models are basically one which mirrors very similarly what we have right now, and that's a committee basically for every item that we have stipulated that we have some authority over that has been identified, versus one where there's fewer committees. We're legally obligated to have a campus safety committee. We're not screwing with the Code and Judicial Committee because that works so well. And remind me what other ones we're not screwing with.
Campus planning. That's going in the minutes.
Because and campus planning, because that's sort of an associated committee. Campus planner has very strong ties to that committee. But we are proposing two committees with broader scopes. So if anybody else wants to take it from there. So those are the fewer committees, broader scope, many committees, narrow scope.
And the many committees, this is still where the chair is a UA member.
Chair is a UA member to keep a link. And I will say that the more and more people I talk to, the more I realize whichever model we choose, somebody's going to be unhappy. So it doesn't seem to be anyone which has the consensus personally that I've been able to see, which will work one way or the other better.
Sure.
Before we move on to comments, can you, as just an example of this child care subcommittee, what would be the fate of that committee in both these scenarios?
Well, I think that the way I look at it, personally, I think we have to consider what, once we have a model, then fine-tune it, like with a principle. On the surface, I would say that probably the child care subcommittee would not be in the charter if we went with the broader scope. It would fall under, I forget the title of it, but...
I think campus welfare.
Campus welfare. And these committees can still establish their own ad hoc committees. And an issue, my personal opinion would be, again, personal opinion, something like child care, which is a hot topic right now. I would advocate that if we adopted that, there would be a child care subcommittee or a child care ad hoc committee up and running, because that's, very much needed. Anybody else want to chime in on that? But I think that the broader one, it would not be stipulated.
They'd be reduced to just coming in as probably testimony, right?
Testimony or an ad hoc, however the broader committee wanted to handle. Yeah.
I just feel like if we're going to stick with the first one, which is not as broad, but like it's more or less maintain the status quo, we just have to acknowledge that there is currently a problem with that system. Mm-hmm. So we would have to make sure that we had like the liaisons, that we had the chairs, we were on top of the committees, which is why I kind of favor the hybrid model as of right now. And it seems like it is truly hybrid. Like we maintain the committees that we currently feel comfortable, which are going at full efficacy, and then we have the smaller ones where areas where you could kind of that don't have as high of topics. And then when the topics come up, then we'll bring in the almost like the expert witnesses.
By hybrid, you mean the larger committee, couple larger committees, and then the smaller ones.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been hybrids of hybrids already.
Mike did an analysis. Do you want to talk about that?
Just a quick poll. How many of you are currently not serving as a chair or a liaison to one of our current committees?
Not.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. So a lot of people here. Do you want to do that? It's something, I see that as a role, as a UA member, we have to be involved in at least one, and I'm expecting pretty much all of us to be involved in each one. So the charter as it stands right now has 18 members of the University Assembly, four of which are going to be chairs of the constituent assemblies. We are not expecting any of those people to be involved in chairing or serving as a liaison to a committee. They already have a committee that we want to keep a connection to, their constituent assembly. Next, we have now an executive board of four people. The president, the vice president, and the executive vice president, or maybe even the ranking member, may have a role as an ex officio member of all the committees, but their primary role and their primary time and effort should be put on focusing their efforts on leading this body, serving the body as its needs arises, communications, internal operations, setting the agendas, etc. So that now brings us to about 10 people, which is going to be very hard. I think we have, how many current listed committees do we have right now, Ari? At the UA?
We're under the current.
I'm sorry, under the many committees or the fewer?
No, the current charter right now.
How many committees?
Yeah.
Current about seven, eight, nine,
let's say. So that's a lot for 10 people to handle. And I think that most of these cases, we would have to ask each person to serve as a primary chair, a liaison. I know that a lot of people in this room have commitments elsewhere beyond the university assembly. They're serving on other committees for their own assembly, involved in other things. Thinking about this and thinking that we only have a committee pool, a staffing pool of about 10 people, it really makes, I think, it difficult to have what we have, what we have listed as, I think, about seven, eight or nine committees right now, and each person serve as, a chair or a liaison to them, and then expect everything to function appropriately,
and
to maintain the level of communication that I think we need by having a number of people liaising with one or two committees.
Well, and fundamentally, if you have 10 people, you'd essentially want to assign two people to committee, ideally from different university assembly pool groups,
exactly,
so that you're building your own sustainability, and somebody, their first day with the committee is, they're also the chair of the committee. It can work, but that adds to that stress and burden of time.
So going off of this, I made the recommendation to the executive committee, at least from my perspective, that we try and staff two to three people to a committee, and this includes probably two or three people to our associate committees like campus planning, public safety, and then about three to each of these larger mega committees, whether it be campus welfare or facilities, transportation, sustainability, whatever we see those titles evolving into. And then try and fill the rest of those committees with actual elected members of the constituent assemblies. So there's healthy representation of every constituency at Cornell. And those constituency members also serve as liaison to those, to each individual constituency on that special topic.
So your story basically being not enough manpower to do a whole lot of committees.
Seems to me that's a very powerful argument for keeping the number of committees relatively small but a somewhat broader scope. Because otherwise, there's no way we're going to be able to staff them. But at least that, if there were two or three people on a committee, at least there'd be some communication channel back and forth from the committee, which is what I feel is so important.
To play devil's advocate, by having broader committees, you lose that specific narrow focus on a particular topic, that's the same narrow focus. Again, these committees presumably can establish their own ad hoc committees to narrowly focus in on something, and I would hope that would be the function.
Ed and I have been talking about this a lot, and we've been going back and forth on
really
it.
The reverse flow would be that any of the chair of these committees would be ex officio members of this committee.
The chairs of the associate committees would be ex officio members, and we were talking about public safety and campus planning. In the case of the other committees, the chair would be one of those three members appointed by the UA.
Is there more comments around the table as to how we ought to proceed here? Because what we'd like to do is to have another draft of the bylaws for you for the next meeting. And this is one of the big questions that needs to be resolved before we can go ahead and do that. And what I hear is general sentiment in favor of the more general, rather overarching fewer in number committees.
Randy has
a question. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I actually like to say something on behalf of the child care subcommittee. And saying that I think we should keep them. And for example, I went to the meeting last week, and I think they're just, I think actually any committee that's ever brought us any information, they did it better than anyone else. That the committee is really amazing in terms of the depth and breadth of their research and their thought processes. One of the things I learned is that HR is giving 30% more subsidy to people that go to the Bright Horizons daycare center than to the other daycare centers around Ithaca, which amounts to $8,000 to $10,000 a year.
Paid for their employees.
What's that?
Paying the employees.
The people that go to Bright Horizons get 30% more in their grant money. They get an extra 30% royalty.
That's what happens.
That includes graduate students?
I don't know.
Our grant is tiny.
So they're wondering about things, like why we had such different opposite data. And they wonder if there's some possibility with this kind of granting. So first of all, the extra money was supposed to be just for the first year, but it just kicked in recently. And it's not sure whether it will stay forever or just some tying over thing. And they're wondering whether they were buying loyalty in this period. And the child care committee has been arguing that any Cornell person that gets a child care grant should be able to take the same 30% to any place, any child care thing. Is Cornell supporting child care, or are they supporting Bright Horizons?
Randy, I think we really ought not to go there at this point. I think what we really need to discuss is to get the bylaws in order. And this is relevant, but it seems to me peripheral.
So let me add one thing that may be less peripheral.
Okay.
With 100 new faculty positions, HR is expecting that the child care needs will be doubled. So it's not something that maybe an ad hoc committee should be working on, but one of our standing.
Okay. Thank
you. Go ahead.
What I was going to say is I recognize that the child care subcommittee functions very well. Brenda is excellent. I exchanged many emails with her. I commend them on doing a wonderful job. But I think what we're talking about here is more the model. You know, that group of people is great. They're doing great work. But is the model, in theory, great? You know, if 10 years down the line, Brenda's not around anymore, it's a different chair, things are working differently. You know, is this the best model to make sure that child care is getting the focus it deserves? Which I think we all agree that child care does deserve focus.
I think that's exactly right. Yes, Alice.
Again, maybe it's just late in the day. If the university assembly dissolved today, there would still be a child care committee, right? Well, why reinvent the? I still go back to the thing I keep saying. Why reinvent it? The CJC would disappear.
We'd get another one too. Yeah, right. With the announcement, there's a new committee, advisory board, whatever.
But there's always other constituencies that have their own committees. I still go back to that. We can create another committee.
No, we're not creating it. It's already there.
Yeah, but we can't legislate. That committee does not derive from us. That committee was created by some other group.
No, this committee doesn't derive from us.
It does. So in other words, if we disbanded, that child care committee would disappear and have to be reborn.
That is correct.
And that I wasn't aware of. Thank you. Thank you.
And the president actually just created a new child care.
Well, that's what I keep asking about, because that's why it goes back to this idea that, you know, personally, you know, having been on the assembly for about 20 years, okay, in one form or another, I like the idea that regardless of anybody, you know, anytime anyone forms a committee that we feel we have some interest in, automatically someone from the UA should be appointed to that committee, whether it's the GPSA that does it, or the president who does it, or anybody does it. because we can't anticipate all the things that people are going to form committees on. And that would sort of argue in favor of a more general approach with ad hoc committees.
This is part of the reason why I think Charlie's idea of putting the chairs of those other assemblies on the UA is so genius, because if the UA goes to, or the GPSA goes to form a committee, now, or gets a movement to form a committee, say a sustainability committee, that presumably that chair should go, wait, sustainability affects everybody. Let me bring this to the UA, which I sit on. This would be better at the UA.
So which one of these models do that?
I mean, well, we have
either one of them
now.
Either one of them, really. Yeah.
But we have, in the multiple, the many groups, we'd actually have to name it and then have a caveat that we can add more later.
Yeah. The larger one may be able to do that in the sense that, let's say it's sustainability. So, we've got, this is, you're really concerned about sustainability and building and financial models, and we've got, UA's got a committee on campus infrastructure. They talk a lot about these issues. Let's bring those concerns to that committee, get them established, and ad hoc one that maybe that's maybe faster.
Okay, thanks for
Selene was trying to get the floor.
No, I just wanted to say, I'm actually in favor of having more specific committees, just because I think in general, members will be more dedicated to that cause. People aren't going to join a broader committee for the ad hoc committee. I mean, they're going to join a specific committee because they're interested in whatever they represent. And I think a broader committee is just, you won't get that passion or that dedication.
Jaron?
I think in either system, we're relying on our members being proactive. I think, like, even if you're in the broader model, yeah, it does scare you that there are only three people, and if they're not proactive, you're not going to have anything going. At the same time, if you adopt the other model, you're really only going to have one or two people, the chair and the liaison. They all have to be proactive. So I think no matter what we choose, it's still up to us to make sure that all these committees fulfill their obligations.
I wonder if it wouldn't be useful, since we're approaching the end here, to have a quick straw vote around the table here. Big general committee or small specialized committee. Let's say all those in favor of the big, more general committees with rather more UA representation, who are in favor of that model? Raise your hands. One, two, three, five. Okay, who is in favor of the smaller, more specialized committees?
Can he do that?
He's voting for both of them.
Ideally, I would choose one, but it's like you don't know if like people are going to fulfill their role, so it's like it's really hard to choose.
For me, it's whether yes or no question.
Right.
For me, it's about what's the most effective. For me, it's committees that have lots of communication where everybody knows what's going on are effective. How can we best get that? By having, I think, fewer committees where there's more back and forth. I agree with Selene about passion. That's good. But if as happens right now under our current system, and it's the multi-committee model similar to our current system, they're existing autonomously. We don't have back and forth. Mm-hmm. Ideas, wheels are being reinvented. People are duplicating work. That's not as efficient as it could be.
I'm worried less about passion and more about getting accurate information about certain things. I mean, our assembly gets information from these committees, and if we get a more broad general numbers or information within a broader committee, it's going to be less useful for us to come up with an appropriate decision than if we had accurate facts from a committee who's specializing in a certain area.
I think I hear what you're saying. I actually think the argument is more strong without defined committee standing committees, in that if you can form committees and they can get the experts that have a passion, they can work with them and then dissolve when for instance right now, I'm pretty passionate about motorcycle riding. Right now, there's a situation where parking is going to could be modified significantly for staff and everybody on campus, and specifically motorcycle. So if we could form a committee, and get passionate people that have, can get garner the facts, and then present that information, that would be good. But I wouldn't want that to sit and then stay, and it should be a cycle. It's alive. It's important. Now I know that was
the last sentence for that is ad hoc.
I understand.
Sorry.
Happy to express it. I hate that. But you're exactly right.
Exactly.
But I don't know. Does that make any? I don't know if that makes any sense.
It doesn't. I think I'll get back to your point later. In the ideal world, Celine, like, I want the current model. I want to be able to like have like these specialists there every week or every other week whenever the committees meet, and then we go and we get things done. The truth of the matter is that model has not been working, and that's why we're trying to address the issue. Now, Ned, during one of our executive committee meetings, did express the same problem that you just expressed, like, what are we going to do with these specialists who we still need, but we don't need all the time? So I think for every one of the broader committees, we have a standing list of these testimonial specialists who would be able to come in when an issue is hot. And it wouldn't just be like issues are kept being thrown out there every week and it's not getting done. It would be like when it's time, when this issue is hot, we'll bring them in and then we'll like deal with it then. So it would be like more like specialized.
Well, another idea that does the same thing is what Ari was talking about, which is you hold an open hearing. And so you invite a variety of people who have strong opinions about motorcycles to come in and talk to you so that you come out eventually with some sense of what the group feels.
Right? I'm just going to say, I'm not trying to be disrespectful with the ad hoc thing. I mean the phrase means for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I think there can sometimes be the sense that an ad hoc committee is lower in standing,
yeah,
somehow less important. I don't think that's the case at all.
Yeah.
I think it's exactly like you're saying. You have an issue. You form a group of people who are passionate and care, are committed to getting accurate information. They work on that issue, and then once they've met their charge, they dissolve. And that's not a way of saying they're less important or that they're not doing good work or anything.
Well, for the straw vote, did you count the number of hands that went up the second time?
I don't think
we did. No, we really kind of got there.
It was more casual. It's like all the time.
Yeah. Then, I mean, Jeremy?
Just getting back to the point that Evan was just making, when I was talking to Brenda when we met, we were talking about what we were considering for the committees, and I didn't like directly ask her, but like in our discussion, I more or less did ask her like how her committee would react if we pretty much like had a smaller system and they would only be called upon in like an ad hoc kind of capacity, and they would feel slighted. I think that would go for a lot of other people. We're essentially taking away jobs from the
well-paying jobs.
They're not paying at all.
Yeah.
But in terms of the intrinsic reward, I think I think we all enjoy doing this.
Well, is it possible in theory to have standing subcommittees? I don't think we're prohibiting that. I mean, if we have a campus welfare committee, they can have a standing committee on child care, can't
right.
they?
We're just reducing their role either way. Like you can't help the way people interpret things. That's all I'm saying. I'm with you all the way. But at the end of the day, it's just like these people are going
to yammer on for the tape recorder.
Distinguished colleagues, it has come to my attention that it is 6 o'clock. I have to go at 6 o'clock. I think that we... this one says 6 o'clock.
It's 6:30.
The one in color says 6:30.
Oh my gosh. Well, which one?
Is it door number one?
I think we have had a good and forthright discussion.
Enough. I wonder if totally not to do with anything, I just wanted to mention out loud there have been some changes proposed to the CCA. Has anybody heard about the Cornell Council for the Arts? Nobody? There are some significant changes that are being proposed here. I think this is, this is related to the greenhouse stuff. I sort of wonder if maybe things have been happening behind the scenes. I think more people need to be consulted. I will send you an email.
Well, the faculty that have written to the response correctly said that they said things have been happening. We're trying to
Well, I think what happened was there was you can go if you have to. I think we're adjourned. What happened was there was a faculty committee that formed to deal with this, and they put together a recommendation.
I think they did something with that.
That recommendation went to the provost, and he said, okay, let's do this.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.